This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive.
This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, being Valentine's Day, we hope you'll love the next half hour, and we start with a bit of Radio Netherlands news. We're 2 days away from our amateur radio spectacular via the antennas of our new shortwave transmitter site on the Flevopolder. Thanks to everyone who's helped publicise the event, we even made national newspapers in several European countries. Our new Flevo transmitter site has 20 directional curtain antennas, and between 6 hours UTC this Saturday right through to 18 hours on Sunday, we'll be connecting two ordinary amateur radio transmitters to that antenna complex instead of the regular 500 kilowatt broadcast transmitters. We did some tests yesterday, and it looks as though we'll have no problem appearing on the 40 and 20 metre ham bands with the special call sign PA6FLD. Since the Guardian newspaper printed my phone number, we've been bombarded with calls from Britain and other parts of Europe asking if we couldn't also operate on a frequency in the 80 metre ham band. We didn't think this would match very well with the broadcast antennas, until we tried it yesterday, and it seems we can. So on Saturday morning, around 09 hours UTC, we will try 80 metres on about 3790 kHz, 3790 in lower sideband for about an hour, and maybe other times too if propagation turns out to be bad. Other frequencies already announced are 7045, 7055 and 14240 kHz. To be sure, though, tune in to this spot on the radio dial in 48 hours' time, and you should find us making a special series of live broadcasts direct from the Flevopolder, in which we'll be able to give you the exact details as they happen in Shortwave Feedback Special. Now to other stations, and I think an amusing story. As you may know, we cooperate quite closely with the German-language media programme on Austrian radio, called Kurzwellen Panorama, especially since Radio Netherlands doesn't have a German service. Like us, they illustrate what's happening on the radio with off-air examples. But just to show you how fate can lend a hand, on Monday night at 18:25 UTC, presenter Wolf Harrant was explaining that the voice of the UAE from Abu Dhabi had been heard testing again on 4800 kHz. No sooner had he said that, though, than Austrian radio signal on 6155 kHz was totally wiped off the 49 metre band by another station. Guess who?
The voice of the United Arab Emirates Radio from Abu Dhabi invites listeners on the shortwave transmitter to monitor our trial service.
They weren't there on Tuesday evening, though. On the line now is Fozi Saleh, technical advisor to the Ministry of Information in Abu Dhabi. Mr. Saleh, what's been built out there in the UAE?
You see, this centre, it consists of four transmitters. The power of each transmitter is 500 kilowatt. Last week, we were transmitting on an omnidirectional antenna. And we are now going just one by one. We have, of course, some directional antennas. Some of it is towards Europe. We have some antennas towards South and North America and to the Far East, of course, to the African continent, to Europe, and signals to the Middle East also.
Now, is each of these transmitters on the air at the moment, or is it only one by one?
No, it is only one. We are testing it one by one. Officially, we might go on air officially at the end of this month.
And what languages will you broadcast in?
In the beginning, we will start with the Arabic main program. And of course, after the programming people prepare in different languages, we might also go on air by English and French language, which we are going now, but in a very small transmitter. But in the first 5 or 6 months, until we establish the whole center, we might go on Arabic.
At the moment, it's just a question that you're going to relay what you're putting out domestically for people in Abu Dhabi, is that right?
In the beginning, really.
Now, there's another shortwave broadcasting station in United Arab Emirates.
Dubai, yes.
In Dubai. Are you any way connected with that?
Really, they are completely independent. In certain occasions, on the National Day or some national occasions, we, of course, join through the microwave. Normally, they are independent.
Mr. Saleh, it's been announced that the Voice of the UAE from Abu Dhabi has two distinct plans, one for a 24-hour shortwave service, but also a medium-wave service for 12 hours a day using a high-power transmitter, and that's also been noted on the air.
The medium wave is on air, but really it is directional, and it is directed towards Pakistan, Yemen, to the Middle East. But until now, we are testing it towards Pakistan.
What frequency is the medium wave transmitted, do you know?
The medium wave is 13, 14 kilohertz, with the power 2 megawatts. For the last month, really, the last 4 weeks, it was really on the air.
And the medium wave transmitter appears to be testing between 15 right through to 21 hours UTC. Now to religious station HCJB in Quito, Ecuador, who seem to be testing a new out-of-band channel. 9870 kHz seemed to be providing good reception at 0730 UTC yesterday.
Hi, I'm Dee Bocklenko, your hostess for the next half hour of Happiness Is.
Another religious organisation, namely Adventist World Radio, also appears to be testing. 6010 kHz appears to be on the air between 15 and 18 hours UTC in German and English, while in the European mornings between 06 to 09 hours UTC, you can hear this on 6145 kHz.
World Radio, Post Office Box 2590,
Rather weak. Mike Wist, manager of AWR Europe, is on the line from Darmstadt in West Germany now. Mike, where are these tests coming from?
Well, from a local Adventist station in Italy. The station is located in Forlì, if you're familiar with the geography of Italy, about halfway between Bologna and Rimini on the Adriatic side of the Italian peninsula.
And this is an independent station, is it?
Well, it's affiliated with the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Italy.
How strong is the shortwave transmitter?
Well, it's actually a linear amplifier, a 10-kilowatt linear amplifier.
And is that testing at full power yet?
Not yet, no. It's actually running now about 2 to 3 kilowatts. We will be installing within the next few days a high-gain log periodic 1002 antenna. At the moment, we're just running with a simple wire dipole antenna.
And where are you planning to aim this antenna?
Our programming at this point is in German and English, targeted primarily to Germany and Britain. But we have the possibility in the future for additional programming in the Yugoslavian languages, in Romanian, in Polish. There's even a possibility down the line of some Danish, Swedish, and French. So, in general, I'd say our target area is Eastern Europe and North Central Europe.
What frequencies are you using?
In the morning, we're using 6145 kilohertz. In the afternoon, we've been trying various different frequencies, including 6080 and 6010. And we may be trying within the next few days, right up at the edge of the band, around 6200.
Media Network's Research File.
I don't think it's going to be difficult to put yourself in my position last night. Round about 1920 UTC, I punched up 4845 kHz, and there was Mauritania with a quite listenable signal.
Vous êtes en compte de l'Office de Radiodiffusion en Télévision de Mauritanie. emit on the North Shore to...
So you lean back and suddenly one of the world's worst sounds emanates from the radio receiver. The sound of the neighbour's television buzz, if you haven't guessed. Put on any shortwave receiver next to a TV receiver or a video monitor and you get this dreadful buzz all over the dial. Both are a dreadful source of interference, and in fact the Dutch PTT has just completed a project showing that video monitors pose a serious security threat. You may have read about so-called computer hackers who've broken into computer systems both in North America and here in Europe. It seems that the telephone links to outside users aren't the biggest security headache these days. Wim van Eck is a researcher at the Dr. Neyer Laboratory, the research lab of the Dutch PTT, and he explained the problem to us.
Well, the weakest link in security is electromagnetic radiation produced by a video display unit, because it can be picked up with a normal television receiver, and the normal television receiver will reproduce the image that is displayed on the VDU on its own screen, and this can be done up to a distance of 1 kilometer. Also through walls. Depending on the type of wall you use, it's more or less attenuated, but it will still come through. Well, there were some stories about this, but nobody actually did see it happen. And then people from our security service came over to the laboratory, and we talked about it, and they asked us to try and show it to them. So we didn't believe very much of it, of course, and then we started to try, and we really did succeed. And it was kind of a shock to us as well.
Even more of a shock when setting up a standard TV outside, plus a standard antenna pointing in the general direction of the video monitor inside the building, produced perfect pictures. Because many video monitors are notorious for radiating spurious signals, the nearby TV set picks up quite a lot of frequencies.
Yes, I think at most of the frequencies you can pick it up. The one problem is, of course, that the video display unit does not radiate its synchronization signals. So the TV receiver is not able to synchronize on the signal it picks up. Any radio amateur can fix that. You just make a little oscillator. And you feed the oscillator signal into the TV receiver synchronization separator. And you will find out that if you have tuned the oscillator to the right frequency, that the image will be clear and readable. Near 16 kilohertz.
While this news has come as a shock to many commercial companies here, the discovery has been known for a while to both amateurs and, of course, national security services.
It is known for years, of course, that this phenomenon exists. And for military and governmental purposes, there are special video display units designed which are not brought on the market. You cannot buy it in a shop. The price has doubled or even tripled in some cases. But of course they have a very high security level because they're only used for very special purposes. They are screened, of course, by metal walls. They're in metal covering. And then before the screen is, most of the times they use a gold-coated screen or mesh wire cables are filtered and so on. And this is what makes it expensive. It's not the metal box, of course, but you have to look through the metal box to see your display yourself.
The Dutch PTT has now come up with a chip designed to solve the security problem. Together with its associated printed circuit board, it can be installed in computer video monitors.
It consists of changing of the sequence in which lines are written on the screen. A TV receiver will expect to start at line 1, then line 2, right to the bottom to line 625 in normal television. And then it starts again at the beginning. Now, if you change that sequence of lines in your video terminal, which is quite easy because it's a piece of digital equipment, lines are written in a random manner, scattered all over the CRT screen, but the picture is still readable. You will see that the TV receiver which picks it up will not be able to restore the picture on video display unit on its own screen. Netherlands PTT has patents pending on this finding. I think it would depend on the number of VDUs that you want to produce with this kind of protection. In large quantities, the price could go down to about $10 or $20, I suppose.
Well, let's hope this security awareness might rub off on the manufacturers of televisions and video monitors. Man-made interference levels already rising on shortwave, and better designed televisions with some sort of shielding to reduce the interference they produce would be a welcome trend too, I'm sure. Meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, over the next few Mondays at 17:30 UTC, there'll be a new computer experiment on British television. With the details, here's Roger Broadbent.
Well, Channel 4 has informed us that it's to start a new method of transmitting computer software over the television screen in its programme for computer buffs. So far, methods have involved viewers having to somehow connect a tape recorder to the television set, but the recordings are often distorted and useless due to buzzers and hums generated by the television set. This method involves sticking a light pen to the screen. The binary information that the computer needs is transmitted as a small pulsating blob. White represents a 1, the blank black screen represents a 0. Developed at the University College Cardiff, this system of software transfer is said to be rather slow at present. A simple computer program takes up to 15 minutes to transmit, but research, as always, continues to speed the system up. By the way, the light pen will cost about £5 to build yourself.
Media Network, not only the when and where, but also the why of shortwave radio.
Back to the phone now, and on the line is Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook. Andy, we were talking about the UAE earlier today. You've got some news from the same region.
Yes, Jonathan, there have been some reports this week that Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini may be close to death. And I took a look at some of the clandestine stations broadcasting to Iran, because obviously they will be affected if something does happen. I've heard two of them this week. At 16:30 UTC, the Voice of the Liberation of Iran signs on with announcements in Farsi and also French and English, and I've caught them on 11630 kHz, 11630, on Tuesday, and the signal was very strong but quite distorted. And nearby on 11640, another station called Radio Iran was noted just signing off at 1926 UTC, and this one is reported to be operated by the National Resistance Movement.
But no idea where the transmitters are.
Well, some of the stations at least are believed to come from Iraq, but which ones exactly is difficult to say. But they're both very strong here in Europe. Well, Jonathan, I've been scanning the bands to see what's changed since the WRTH 85 went to press, and one of the things I discovered is Africa number 1 in Gabon, which has been very strong every day the past couple of weeks, around 1200 UTC, on 17820. That's 17820. And it's in parallel with the regular 15200, but much stronger. So I don't know if this is a new frequency or perhaps an engineering test.
Well, Africa number 1 is doing so well, it seems that they're planning to build another transmitter in the short term and also an omnidirectional antenna. That was Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook. And if you'd like to have a go at winning a copy of the 1985 edition, then listen out in 48 hours. You might also find an atlas useful. I shall say no more.
Media Network's PubSpot.
We've mentioned the activities of Dutch author and publisher Michael Schai before now. Two more publications from his base in Doorn, that's about 40 minutes' drive from here, have now come out. So I went along to his production centre on Tuesday. Now, the first publication deals with this sound that you'll find on the bands. What you're hearing is a weather picture being built up. Nice on its own, but I put it to Michael that you obviously need special equipment to decode that signal. An ordinary shortwave radio is just not sufficient.
No, that's right. You need special equipment, of course. And there are very expensive facsimile recorders. But lately they've developed some cheaper models for radio amateurs. And these will cost you about $1,000. And they process a picture on your screen, on the television screen. So you don't need paper and you don't need a recorder.
So you've simply made a list then of all the frequencies and the schedules?
That's right, and the power of the station and the schedules and the addresses.
And what's the hobby? Is it actually DXing these stations or is it just looking at the weather maps?
Well, of course, if you have got an interest in meteorology, that's more interesting to watch the facsimile stations. But, of course, many DX catches are possible. And from that point of view, it's also very interesting.
And what sort of power are they working with? Because in the broadcasting circles, you've got, 500, 250 kilowatts. Presumably from the meteorological services, it's much, much smaller.
Yes, I think about 5 to 10 kilowatts from most stations.
And who are they designed to serve?
They're designed to serve the Navy, ships that want to receive weather charts. And of course, they're used as standby channels for the satellite communications.
So presumably most of the meteorological activity is now transferred to satellite instead of shortwave?
Yes, that's right.
And how much does this retail for?
This costs 23 Dutch guilders, and airmail costs are extra, of course. To North and Central America and Africa and the Middle East is 15% extra, and to the rest of the world, South America, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, it's 30% more.
But how do you compile it? Do you just look it up in official publications, or do you use this bank of equipment that's sitting behind us?
Yes, that's right. The equipment is used, and this list was compiled together with Jo Balneger, a specialist in this field. And he has checked all frequencies in all stations, and that's reflected in the list itself.
Does it go out of date pretty quickly, though?
No, the facsimile stations, there are not so many changes.
Now, we mentioned two publications. The other one's called US Military Radio Communications, which sounds a bit dangerous to start with. I mean, can you publish that sort of material?
Well, obviously, yes. I haven't had any problems yet. But it basically contains point-to-point channels and mobile channels of the US Army and of the US Air Force and the US Navy all over the world.
I can imagine that many military operations would be rather annoyed, I should think, to get a report from a listener saying we managed to decode your operations.
Well, of course, if the information transmitted is classified, they will decode it, they will scramble it or whatever. So the information you receive is never highly secret.
But on the other hand, these people don't come up on the air and say, yes, this is a military base, blah, 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 and give all the coordinates. So how have you compiled the information?
Well, there are a few official lists, for example, from the ITU in Geneva, and there are some military specialized publications. And if you combine those things and you look carefully into both, you can compile such a detailed frequency list with the background information.
But if all the secret communications are scrambled, what can you pick up?
Well, of course, the identifications, those are not scrambled. And you should be amazed to see how much interesting traffic is still going on unscrambled. Because scrambling is an expensive business and it takes extra equipment for the military as well. So if they can do anything unscrambled, they will do so. For example, you can receive US Air Force planes in flight and they say where they are coming from and where they are going to. And that's easy, that's unscrambled, and you can just listen into that, if you know the frequencies, of course.
Okay, you're allowed to do it in Holland, but I can imagine that in other parts of the world, listening to these sort of frequencies must be strictly forbidden.
Yes, it's different in every country, but I think it's not so much of a problem, since some stations do actually issue QSL cards and QSL letters. If this was such a secret, they wouldn't do that.
And does there seem to be a growing trend towards not only listening to the international broadcasting stations, but also to the utilities, especially with this equipment being available?
Yes, that's right. I think that's true. More and more people are getting interested in the non-broadcasting reception.
But isn't the trend, as far as telex stations is concerned, in other words, the news agencies, towards putting all this on satellite?
Yes, that's true. Recently, the French press agency, AFP, has decided to get their Hong Kong relay off the air. And that was because one of their customers had complained that radio amateurs could actually receive the news for free and they had to pay lots of money for the same.
So the fact that these decoders are available has in fact got back to the owners of these particular stations?
Yes, that's right. But on the other hand, there are new stations appearing. For instance, last year the Bangladesh news agency appeared on shortwave. And there have been reports for the Malaysian news agency and the Ecuadorian news agency. So I wouldn't say that the trend is only to satellite. I mean, the third world countries who have low budgets can use shortwave for a rather long time from now.
That was Michael Schrey. If you'd like more details on the meteorological station's list or the other military publication, you'll find Michael Schrey's address in the 6th edition of Radio Netherlands Booklist, available from us free of charge.
Media Networks, Info Dutch. Information of direct use to computer hobbyists.
We had a lot of reaction after we mentioned a device designed to plug into a Commodore 64 home computer and simulate a situation as though you were on an expedition to a remote island. There you'd set up an amateur radio station and attempt to contact rare stations around the world. This was all simulated by a device called Dr. DX, but it was really designed for the experienced Morse code operator. Now there's a new extra for the same computer called Dr. QSO, QSO being amateur radio jargon for a contact with another station. The manufacturers and designers are Advanced Electronic Applications of Linwood, California, USA. And on the line we have the company's director, Mike Lamb.
Device is a plug-in firmware hardware item that goes into a Commodore 64 computer, and on the screen will be displayed a very simple novice style CW transmitter front panel. The controls on the front panel can be operated from the keyboard of the computer, and it is a single band only 7 megahertz to 7.15 megahertz transceiver. Mm-hmm. You can tune across the band, and as you go from the low end of the band to the high end of the band, you'll find stations in contact with each other, and they are carrying on normal rag-chew style conversations, or QSOs.
Yeah, about the weather and things like that, you mean?
About weather, their locations, their names, the signal reports, all the standard information that is given in a normal CW contact.
And what can you do then?
You can wait until they finish your conversation, and then you can give a station a call. If you find someone in Minneapolis and you'd like to find out what the weather is in Minneapolis at that time, supposedly, you can give this fellow a call, and he'll come back to you, and you can ask him how the weather is, and he'll tell you. Of course, it's a weather that is fictitious for the particular date that you might be operating, but it's certainly within the range of temperatures common to that area. Now, you can also call CQ if you like, and stations will come back to you, and you can proceed to talk with them.
Now, you say that this Dr. QSO device is also aimed as a training aid. So does it also check that you're keying in the right sort of Morse characters?
Yes, it certainly does. It has a mode which monitors the code as you send it out, and it will give you an immediate indication if you are sending your characters, running your characters together as an example, or putting in too much space between characters. It points up a sloppy fist immediately.
Yeah, but how do you send the code? Is it a matter of bashing one of the keys on the Commodore's keyboard, or can you use a proper Morse key?
We have a Morse code key input that you can use to hook up to a regular hand key, a telegraph key, or to a Morse code electronic keyer. In addition to that, we have a keyboard mode, so that if there is a person that is interested in getting into this wonderful hobby but doesn't know the code yet, they can sit down to the keyboard and simply type it out. And as they type each letter, they will hear the Morse code sound. It will appear on the screen showing what's being sent. And the little computer stations that you're conversing with will be able to read it.
But how many stations are there inside this computer memory?
The stations are randomly generated. Theoretically, encounter as many as half a million stations.
Yeah, but would each of these half a million stations ask you the same thing? Because I think that would get rather boring, wouldn't it?
The first two exchanges are typically established. In other words, the first exchange will be for signal report, QTH, and name. The second exchange would typically be the transmitter or receiver that the computer-generated station is running and the weather. After the second exchange, it goes into a freewheeling rag shoe style of operation, and you don't know what you're going to wind up with.
Now, a while back we talked about a device called Dr. DX, also from you, for the same home computer. It was then priced near $150 US. I believe that's now dropped to $100. Is Dr. QSO cheaper?
Yes, the Dr. QSO in the United States will be introduced at $79.95.
That was Mike Lamb. Coming soon, a new computer program from us, so watch this space. In the remaining seconds, let's look at current propagation conditions, as supplied from the US Space Environment Services Center at 0745 UTC today. Solar activity had a value of 73. The estimated A index was 7 after measurements throughout yesterday. The Boulder K index at 06 hours today was 3. And in the next 24 hours, solar activity is expected to be very low. The geomagnetic activity will be unsettled, so slightly better conditions than this time last week. That's it for now. More next week, including African media developments. Thanks to today's contributors, which included additional research by Hans Geijanse. And this is Jonathan Marks saying, don't forget this Saturday's bit of fun, and bye for now.
Contributions to Media Network, Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.